In a world where multi-million dollar satellites are used to find Tupperware in the woods, through the magic of the internet, which is just a series of tubes, coming to you from the surface of planet Earth, the Slaga Geocaching Podcast is about to begin.
You are listening to episode number 72 of the Slaga Geocaching Podcast, produced by Paul Konopacki of St. Louis, Missouri. Part 2 of 2. Interview with father and son geocaching team, Yotag and Lobox.
The previous episode was part one of my conversation with Yowitag and Lobox. Lobox is the father and Yowitag is the son. In this episode, we complete the interview. Because there's a lot of content, I'll get right to it. We start with a discussion of geocacher Osguff, who is a prolific geocacher from Asheville, North Carolina. He visits the St. Louis area on occasion. During the podcast, when you hear this sound, it means I'm going to describe what you hear next. When you hear this sound, it means there has been a change in the conversation. Did you guys have an Osguff story?
He does.
Yes and no.
Well, I'll hear it anyway.
Everybody knows about Osguff and his little escapades in St. Louis area a couple of years ago, I guess. I never met him personally. He and I had a little give and take in North Carolina. There was a series of caches that was started that were first to find caches. If you were the first to find on the cache, you had to place the next one in the series. It was started by a couple of caches up in the Asheville, North Carolina area. And Osguff found one. He placed one also in the Asheville area. About the 9th or 10th one in the series, I just happened to have the day off. It was on a Saturday, and I ran up and got it. And the one I placed was probably 30 to 40 miles outside of Asheville. Oz came and found it, and the comment he put on there was, these are caches that were supposed to stay up in the Asheville area, because that's where it was started. He says, I'm going to take this and put it back up in Asheville. So that started a little give and take. So when that one got published, another guy and I planned on going up and getting it together. And very cold and windy February day, I think. The other guy actually beat me to it. He stayed there while I went and got it also. But he let me place the next one. We again moved it down to our area. So it's like I said, it started a little give and take of who's going to find the next one. Osguff is one of the great ambassadors of our hobby of geocaching. I think he's got over 8,000 or 9,000 finds. He's placed probably close to 1,000 caches in the mainly in the North Carolina, Asheville, and the Smoky Mountains. One of these days, I guess I'll meet him. He's an interesting individual, to say the least. They have their administrative type meetings 2 or 3 times a year. They give out yearly awards for the best caches, most creative, different areas of caching.
We've been somewhat organized since 2001. Other than a few people making comments like, oh, maybe you should check this cache, it's pretty good. We don't officially recognize on any basis. We don't say, best cache of the year or whatever. So you guys got any thoughts on that?
Well, not yet, you're not.
Anything in the works on that?
When Dad was talking about the awards down there, we thought, well, there isn't anything up here as far as we know, and I know Dad posted in the group asking about it. Just like with everything else in Slaga, once you bring up the idea, it's yours. We were told, run with it. We've drafted some ideas of how we're going to do the awards. Plan is to award them at the Christmas get-together. We've come up with 10 different categories that we're going to award for caching.
As Andrew said, it's on its way to the board right now for their approval. They gave us pretty much an open rain on doing this. But we don't want to go forward without the approval of the board saying, okay, you can do it. Let me say first that this is not awards from the Slagger board. Nominations for the caches and the voting will all be done by the membership and not by the board. The board has no input into this at all.
And I think it'd be better to call it the People's Choice.
Yeah, it's like a People's Choice.
Cash's Choice Awards.
We're looking at the three type of caches, the traditional, multi, and the mystery puzzles. Each of those three type caches, you'd have the most creative, the most difficult, and the best liked. They would be nominated by the membership and voted by the membership. We'll give them about 5 weeks to do the nominations and then compile everything, and about a week later put it out for the voting.
I think we're looking at announcing the nominees at the fall picnic.
And giving them about 5 or 6 weeks. And then we'll do the presentation at the Christmas party. And then the other categories we have was the best cache series or themed cache or event. And then the most scenic, the best urban, most physically challenging cache, and the most mentally challenging cache. It's similar to what South Carolina does every year. The winners in each of the categories, there'll be a certificate for them, and there'll also be a banner that they can put on the cache page itself, saying that, you know, this is the Slagger membership award for best like multi.
And we'll probably set up bookmarks as well. Someone new comes in the area or wants to come and cache for the weekend. These are the ones that apparently people in the area enjoy and think are worthy of being noticed.
Everybody likes to be recognized. As long as this is kept as a membership award instead of something from the board on Slagger. Right. I think we can get away from popularity, personality issues.
Total population of all caches within Slagger territory are considered. And, of course, somebody may say, well, mine's like a mile outside of Slagger territory.
You know, we have to obviously set barriers. We can't nominate a cache that's currently archived.
The decision of the judges is final.
There we go.
Right now, there's two judges.
And, you know, we tried to write the official rules to be fair so that there isn't any judges' thoughts on what should win, and we even have conditions for ties and how that gets pulled out, because the last thing we want is someone to think, well, it was a tie, but since the judges like that one better, they're picking it. I think we're making it as fair as we can. Hopefully it'll be liked through the community.
Oh, we're pretty thick-skinned.
Yeah.
Recently said you were going to help participate in the training for the geocaching classes.
You were up to date. That was sent last night at midnight.
Yeah.
Like I was telling Dad on the way here, you get what you put into something, and that's what you get out of it. First, we were probably behind the scenes just enjoying caching around here, and now that we're getting to the point where we're placing caches and are a little more involved with the group, it's time for us to become a little more involved and put back what we've been given, and then hopefully it'll come back to us. I volunteered to do that. It's on a Saturday, and I can probably get the day off and have fun teaching other people about geocaching.
I'll probably be there, too.
I figured.
You had some idea about caches in conservation areas, too, that you were investigating?
Yeah, I didn't know that there was a particular approval that needed to be given. I guess I should have done my homework. I looked at the other caches at the conservation area, and there really wasn't anything that mentioned that they had direct approval. And I went with that, placed out How Puzzling Number 3, put it online, and was politely told that I need to get permission by Glenn. I got name and address and everything of the guy, and we've currently put in the application, and we're just waiting on that to be accepted. It's actually at Columbia Bottoms. Tom Lederman or something to that effect, who is responsible for Columbia Bottoms. When I sent him the email, he came back and said there shouldn't be any problems, just fill out the application. And now we're just waiting on the information. Special use permit is what we'll need.
Okay. Yeah, there's currently two caches in the area. As long as we don't oversaturate.
Caching experiences, types of caches you like, ones you don't like, ones you still want to do.
Wow, that's a big
I guess
big
we just
topic.
Start with our favorites. My recent favorite was down south, orienteering for geocachers. Place by No Future. That was nice. I guess you'd call it a multi, but I think it was listed as a puzzle. With a nice little walk at the end with a bunch of projections. Luckily with the Vista, it wasn't as difficult as it could have been.
Fort DC. Another good one. That's by Rockfish.
Rocket thing.
Right.
I've heard people talk about that and have to go back multiple times.
It's got some projection in it, and then, you know, the final is a little tricky. You have to be very observant.
And the final's pretty much out of the way, though, where there might be times you have to worry about them. For the most part, around the Muggle factor, you're more, it's just looking for things, not necessarily finding things. It was a 2-day for us. We were out there the first day and thought we realized it, but it just wasn't working the way we thought it was.
And then the thunderstorm came in.
We must have looked everywhere in there, and then the thunderstorm came in, and I don't think I've been that wet since I was in school. Went home, and I decided at work the next day I was going to raid the tool chest to make sure that we would get whatever it was, because we were almost certain what it was, and we got clarification and went out there the next day, and I think it was 5 minutes and we had it figured out. So
you had to bring a screwdriver or pliers or tools like that with you?
Ended up we didn't. No. The original thought wasn't exactly what it was. No. No.
Not really. Another good one that we've done was Happy Kraut's 623.
Is that the one over on his property.
Okay. At his house.
Luckily, he wasn't home that day, or
he would have been laughing.
Oh, he loves to watch people sure struggle on finding his caches.
That is probably one of the best ones in this area that I've done.
Interesting, because I've heard a number of people say that.
Without giving anything away, it's a mind boggler.
So that could very well show up on your list of favorites.
I don't want to give any early favorites or anything, but
I believe on my page it is one of my favorites. When I went out to Reno this past May, series I was going to do out there of 10 caches that went through 3 or 4 different counties in and around Reno. I had contacted a couple of people out there, questioned them whether I needed to watch out for rattlesnakes and different terrain. And one cacher said, well, if you do that in 2 days, I'll be impressed because of the distances and the difficulties. Went to the first one and found it with not too much problem. It was a little bit of climbing through some rocks. I have it on my list as one of my favorites because as I'm walking to the cache area, I saw a herd of wild horses in the field. And they didn't even move. They just stood there and looked at me. You know, to see the wild Mustangs and the wild horses like that was pretty neat. The second one I went to on the list that I had, I went down dirt road and it got soft. And I got bogged down into the dirt, had to get pulled out. Sat there for about 3 or 4 hours waiting for the tow truck to get me out of there.
Cell phone with you, or did you have to?
I had a cell phone, yeah. Also found out that dirt road was actually private property, so it wasn't even supposed to be in that area. But while I sat there and waited, I went over and got the cash, you know, as a good cacher would. And I hit a third one, but that's all I got in while I was there. So I never did finish the series.
We joked that second one was the most expensive cache you've ever done.
Most expensive. I'm not going to say how much it cost me to get pulled out. Geocaching out west in Utah, Nevada, is very extreme. We were talking earlier about the quest, the caching place. The recent quest was based in Utah, around Moab, Utah, where all the red cliffs and the mountains are. I've been out there twice in that area, not caching, but just visiting. I can see how extreme the caching is. There are a lot of difficulty in terrain caches out there that are 4, 4.5, and 5s. There's a lot of jeeping or mountain biking. I learned a little bit of that around Reno with the few that I did there. You got to make sure you've got your water, your snake bite kits, and your first aid kits, all that stuff. Long pants. Yeah. And I can imagine that even further south when you get down into New Mexico, Arizona, that it's probably extreme like that also.
I think you're saying their idea of a two-terrain is a lot different than our idea of a two-terrain. Our two-terrain might be a 100-foot bushwhack through the woods. Their two-terrain is a
100-foot up the side of a mountain.
Yeah, you know, that's an everyday thing for them. So you just can't get your wheelchair there, so we'll have to make it a 2. Our 5s to them would probably be 3s, and their 5s would be our 30s.
Depending on where you go in the country, caching is different. We enjoy the puzzles.
Have you done Safecracker cache?
We have attempted it.
We have been there. We'll say that. We've been there.
I found the cache.
We spent about 30 or 40 minutes trying to break it and did not get into it.
Well, we thought we had it figured out. And when we got there, it was completely different than what we thought it would be.
Even when you figure out where the rods are supposed to be, getting it right at the spot is the physical part of it.
We were talking to Pandy Andy about it, and he gave us a little push in the right direction. So I think the next time we have a chance, we're going to finally go out there and take that off my DNF bookmark. But yeah, we prefer the puzzle caches. I think all of the ones that we could figure out in the area at home, we've figured out and have gotten the correct waypoints. It's just getting out to them to find them.
We enjoy a variety. If we're not interested, like in the summertime now when it's high humidity and temperature, and ticks and chiggers, and we've been limiting ourselves to maybe a two difficulty, two terrain, going more for the easier ones during the hot weather.
When we plan our day, we don't specifically look for anything unless we're getting really close to one of our milestones. But if it's just a normal day, we'll pick an area such as Edwardsville or St. Charles or down south.
Troy or something.
Whatever it happens to be, and we'll just figure out a path through there to get the most caches we possibly can.
Now, do you have to drag the rest of the family along?
Most of the time, it's see you later. When I started out, my wife and I were doing a lot of them together. First started, got introduced in Florida with it, and then North and South Carolina, we'd take the dog with us, go through the parks and different areas, and make a day of it. Now, it's basically Andrew and I, and we take the dog with us. She enjoys getting out there and running through the fields, running through the parks.
Mom is into it. If she's got nothing else to do and we're not doing anything too much, she might come out and walk with us just to get the fresh air. But my wife, no. She's okay with me doing it, but she's not that interested in it.
Did you say exactly how you first found out about it?
I remember a couple years ago hearing about it and looking it up and thinking, well, I can't do it. I don't have a GPS unit. I kind of wish I had. We're doing a lot of fun, but I know one day Dad talked to me about it, or Grandpa explained how fun it was, and I looked it up, and it seemed like a lot of fun. It was a way to get out, enjoy the outside, also enjoy being on a computer, but now I enjoy going out and caching more. And when they came up in March, took me out, and from the first one, it was a hobby.
It's a great hobby, or sport, if you want to call it a sport. If it's a sport, I'm an athlete. It's a way of getting out there and getting exercise.
Seeing parts of the area you never would have known. Honestly, I wouldn't have even known Spanish Lake Park was over there if it weren't for caching. Because I think it's made us, and especially Dad, only being here a few months, it's made him more comfortable with the area. You know, you get to know where a lot of the big places are and how to get from one place to the other without needing the use of directions.
First time, in fact, we went up to Spanish Lake. It was three caches up there. As we were walking across the field, there's a half dozen deer standing out there just watching us. The same thing happened down in Jefferson Barracks. Walking some of the trails down there, and this deer is just standing 5 feet into the woods and didn't move. What are you doing here? This is my area.
I think the one time we were out doing the Horace Greeley and the Santa Claus, and we were walking toward whichever one it was, and there was a rabbit in front of us. And we were actually two, and one ran off into the woods, and the other one started hopping ahead of us. And we were like, hey, show us where the cache is. And sure enough, it stayed in front of us the whole way and stopped right where the cache is located. And then once we got there, hopped away. And every time we see a rabbit now, we joke, and we must have had another two or three since then that have gotten us pretty close to the cache.
Muggles had a few instances where either a child or somebody comes up asking, you know, what you're doing. We try not to lie. Yeah, we try to inform them as to what we're doing. The more people that know about it, the less that the caches will get muggled, that they will disappear. The more enthusiasts will get into geocaching. Authorities haven't really run into any. There was one outside of Edwardsville that we went to do, and there was a night watchman at company that was right next to where the cache was. We pulled up, he gets out of his car, he's going to tell us to get out of here. And we explained it to him and said, you know, it's right over there. And he says, well, this property is co-owned by the company that's here and the farmer that lives up the road. And I said, well, I would think the cache has been approved to be here, but, you know, maybe it's not. We'll let the cache owner know. So we told him what we were doing and even showed him the cache and open it up. He was interested in
it. It's always helpful when you find it, then they know you're not lying.
Right. I think we kind of talked him into it, too, because, you know, he was standing his ground on, you know, I can't let you go over there. That's private property. You know, the farmer won't let me. And I think we just kind of kept talking to him about it. And why don't you come over here?
Over
you know, why don't you come over here and see what we're doing? And it was dark at the time, and I really didn't think we'd find it. And I'm glad we did. Showed him, and he seemed interested. Maybe we found a new cacher out of it. And there was one other time we were out near the Verizon Amphitheater. There's a cache on a picnic table there. That same day, Ozfest was going on, and we were pulling in to park to get the cache that he had already gotten. It was just for me to get, and he thought we were parking to go to the concert, and he's like, you can't park here, and Dad explained to him what we were doing as I walked over and did it.
I've heard that story 100 times. Get out of here.
Yeah, exactly. I showed it to him when I found it. He came over and looked at it, and he seemed interested too. But as far as true authorities, other than security officers, we haven't had too much. As far as muggles and stuff, we're real careful about not diving into woods while a guy's walking by trying to look innocent. But I guess when you try to look innocent, my line of work, we look for people trying to look innocent. I guess I don't even take my own advice. If we get caught, say we don't lie to them. We'll explain to them what we're doing, and hopefully, instead of them coming back later, if we didn't talk to them and finding it and doing something to it, at least this way they might have a little more respect with what's there. The Slaga group, from my experience, been more than helpful in any questions I've had, whether it's a geocaching question or just general living in the area questions, from local flea markets to geocaching. Anytime I have a question, I actually go there first. And if I can't get it answered there, then I'll go to my next source. In my short time here, I felt welcomed. Enjoy that. You know, when you can go to a picnic and not know what anyone looks like or how anyone acts and basically be welcomed into the group as well as we did. It was enjoyable.
Geocaching as a group, as a society, is a great bunch of people. I saw that in North and South Carolina. I see it again here. I see the hobby growing as it has been for the last couple of years with the cost of GPS units decreasing, better units being produced every year. It's a growing hobby.
We've recently gone paperless on our caching.
At first, Dad was a little hesitant. He wasn't so sure how it would work out, but as long as you make sure it's the most up-to-date GPX, you're good with paperless. Weekly, I get my pocket query sent to me.
First time he was doing paperless, I had printed off the caches. And every time I'd pull one out, he was calling me a tree killer.
Yeah. Brian in the woods, good to see you.
Paperless is good.
We still carry a notebook to
make notes and stuff like that.
We got an old Palm 3 from my mother-in-law that she wasn't using, and that has plenty of space available. Grandpa came up with his pocket PC and color, and I get the same stuff off my little one. He enjoys doing it paperless. I think that's kind of where we got the idea when I realized how easy it was through GSAC.
I use an Explorer's 200. And in order to download into it, you got to take the batteries out, a little plastic thing behind the batteries.
Actually a hack to do that anyway.
So there's no cable that plugs in?
They started that with the Q10. Yeah. You know, I'm still punching them in.
My first was a Garmin GPS 3. You could upload waypoints, but whatever map was there, you're stuck with that. You couldn't upload maps. And then they came up with a GPS 3 Plus, which we could upload maps.
We've been thinking about some way of putting a platform in the car for the laptop.
Richard Shuffle did that. He welded something on the frame on the passenger side because Charlotte, she doesn't cache. Rich, he's got 3,500 caches. So she'll go along, but while he's out caching, she'll sit in the car and read her book. Mm-hmm. Well, he put this little platform up there, not only that she could put her book up there, but he can have the laptop and he can swivel it and see it at the right angle as he's driving. Yeah. Physically modified his vehicle to have a little stand.
Have you done any of the caches out this way?
I've done anything down this area.
Oh boy.
We're expanding. I think there's only two caches within 5 miles now. Yeah, that's what we do in our spare time. We go out and look at the puzzles and solve them. Good. I mean, I've done that in other states.
Oh, somebody emailed me about a cache that Bruce Hess had put out here. And it was a crypto thing. You had to figure out what the code was in order to figure out where the cache was. He says, I'm not from around there, but I just like doing puzzles. So, you know, I've been having a hard time with this one. Help me figure it out. I think there's a website where you could cheat if people post the results of puzzle caches.
Yeah, well, there's websites like Sudokus. Go out there and key the numbers in. It gives you the solution. Cryptograms, little applets where you can run all the different signet codes and Caesar codes, things like that.
when we were talking about the safe cracker, it says that he was disappointed that people were solving it too quickly. So that he's going to come up with one that every new time somebody tries to find it, changes. The combination is different.
Yeah, that one we're thinking about might be a frustrating, beyond challenging.
There's a frustrating way and a challenging way, and it's all about how you go about it, I guess.
I used to not want to ask for additional hints, but I've got to that point now that if I don't find one, I'll personally email the owner and say, give me another hint, and that's usually enough for them to get me there.
We've done it on a couple.
Rockfish one.
That's the disadvantage of not having a cell phone, because you do the phone a friend. You're out there, I can't find it. Call until, Rich or call Strider.
Until just recently, I didn't even have anyone's phone number, so that wouldn't have helped either. But apparently, Strider's the guy to call if you want to get a hold of anybody.
Strider else. Or RGS, either of those guys.
They seem to have the numbers for everybody.
Happy Crowd's got 3,500, and Rich was, got 3,500.
There was two of them that hit 3,500 the same week.
Both RGS and Happy Crowd. Okay. I told Rich that, I said, you guys are neck and neck, because they reached 3,000 about the same time, too. And he said, well, actually, Happy Crowd's around 3,600 now. It just hasn't hit that milestone.
But he takes trips.
Oh, yeah. He was in Newfoundland for a couple months, I think.
Mm-hmm. That's when we hit his 623.
That's the time to go when he's not around to laugh at you.
We didn't know that.
I won't say we were newbies because we'd been around for a while, but we were newbies to Happy Crowd, I guess.
That was interesting.
Well,
did you do 623?
I have not done that. And Cribbage Witch and Habitaz had done it, and she was nervous about rooting around in people's yards, turning over gnomes or whatever.
Yeah.
So I have an idea where it could be.
It says it's not past this, it's not this, do not move this. Okay, so it's not, it must be that.
Is that also one that has decoys?
Yes.
Yes.
Okay. Yes. Not past the frog. Maybe it is the frog.
Do the decoys help narrow you in, or no. Just say it's not this?
Not really.
It says good try, or this isn't it, and
keep searching.
You have to have more than one person, I think, to do that one.
Yeah, we had three of us.
We had three, and it took us 15 minutes.
So I finally realized what it was, and even then,
it took a little bit.
You couldn't tell right away.
There's one that Rich did. Gosh, I could probably just tell you, but you still might not remember it after I told you. He did one. It was like, I think, a tour of Webster Grove.
Oh, yeah.
And it brought you into a parking lot.
Was that the one with the old houses? The Sears houses?
Ended up taking you into a parking lot in Webster Grove, and you were looking for a micro. It was a busy place all around you. I had the cash in my hand, and I didn't know it. So I thought, and I just dropped it because I didn't think it was the cash. 15 minutes later, I come back, walk, I said, no, that was the cash. Something small, something drilled out. So that's all.
Is the screw on the handicap sign?
Bolts on a sign.
Yeah, it might have been the one we did.
Yeah.
In the back of a couple businesses.
I had one in South Carolina. After I had come up back from Florida, it was the first ones I did up in that area. One was at a helicopter at a VFW post. Getting dark. And I'm in there with a flashlight looking around. I knew it was at the helicopter. I had one piece of something that was in, like, the intake. I didn't have a flashlight. That's what it was. So I went back to the car with the dome light, looking at it. Thought it was it. Nothing. I put it back, and I gave up on it. 2 days later, I'm doing some caches. And I come back to the car, and I see a little capsule in my seat.
Oh!
Where'd that come from? Who put that in my car? I thought somebody, while I was looking for a cache, had come by and put it in my car. I opened it up and I saw who the cache's name was on. I said, oops, they're not around here. That was up in that other town. And it dawned on me, the piece that I took out of the helicopter to the car, it fell out of it.
Yeah.
And I didn't see it.
Wow. Oops. You found the cache and you didn't know it. And you had it with you.
It was the same thing. You threw it on the ground.
Yeah. Wow.
This concludes the Slaga Podcast. For more information about the Slaga Group and geocaching in the St. Louis, Missouri area, go to www.geostl.com.
Here's wishing you a strong signal and a trusty bearing.